Hiya, Wanju. Hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Filmmaker David Robinson Smith, DRS, is one of the major voices of the new Australian film industry. His films include Mud Crab, We Used to Own Houses, and his latest effort, Shirt Off Your Back, each an essential entry in an increasingly vital filmography. I first encountered Mud Crab by one of those online film festivals in the middle of the pandemic. It hollowed me out with its soul-shaking intensity. The sight of a group of shirtless men bullying, cajoling, shoving a man out of the man, all the while Lenica Den's singular observer, an unreliable narrator, watches and waits in the wings. That sense of hollowing out felt even more urgent and intense with DRS's follow-up short, We Used to Own Houses, a poem about the crippling nature of the housing crisis, playing out against the startling and stark imagery captured by cinematographer Jacqueline Patterson. Stepping back further, we have films like Budgeroy Boy, a dance film of sorts that, like most of DRS's work, dismantles masculinity. And then the other shorts, Trap and Go or Don't Go. They're very well worth digesting alongside a bunch of other work that David has done. I'll stick a link to his website and provide the URL for that in a short moment. That sense of masculinity and what it means in a modern sense is a fundamental theme that is explored in David Robinson Smith's work. His latest short, again, The Shirt Off Your Back, is equally essential, somehow marking a step forward in his filmography in a way that he centres the storytellers as co-authors, with the two young boys in the film receiving co-writing credits. Dubbed as a dark fairy tale of sorts, in my perspective it's also another poem, The Shirt Off Your Back leaves a mark in the way that only a David Robinson Smith film can do. It's hard to scrub out, and if you manage to get that dirt and grime loose, then you're left with the scar of what he and his regular collaborators put on screen. When we talk about this new wave of Australian filmmakers, in inverted commas there, a term which I'm starting to lean towards calling the rising swell of modern Australian cinema, doesn't roll off the tongue, is the way that new wave of Australian filmmakers does, but it's at least distinct from the last Australian new wave that we had. Well, then we think of people like David Robinson Smith. We think of people like the cinematographer Jacqueline Patterson, actor, writer Lenica Den, actor, writer Fraser Ball Clark, or actor Josh Mehmet. These are a lot of David's regular collaborators and people who I really look up to and admire. The work that they are creating collectively and singularly is shaping what Australian cinema can do on screen. And through that, it's then shaping what the Australian identity is as well. This is vital work. Over the coming months, this notion of the rising swell of Australian cinema is one that I'll explore at length via conversations like this one with David Robinson Smith or essays about the creatives I'm spotlighting. Look out for upcoming chats with filmmakers like Lucy Coleman and Kate Fitzgerald as examples of other filmmakers who are on the rise and really setting a tone of what the rising swell of a modern Australian cinema looks like and who those voices are. In the following conversation, you'll hear Dave and I talk about that amongst a whole bunch of other things. This is a long discussion, one which I'm really grateful that we were able to have. David reached out to me to do this conversation prior to the Sydney Film Festival, and due to, well, life and things in general, stress, depression, anxiety, all those things, really wholesome stuff, which curiously are things that are slightly explored in some of his films. But I was going through that kind of stuff, and hence there has been a bit of a delay in getting this particular episode out. But I really hope that you enjoy being able to digest this conversation, and I hope that you enjoy being able to explore David's work as well. There's a lot of enthusiasm from me for his work, and there's a lot of enthusiasm from the filmmaking community for his work as well, not just within Australia, but globally as well. There is a wide response to a film like Mud Crab, which is quite powerful to see. Nonetheless, if you're interested to find more about David's work, visit davidrobinsonsmith.com. Again, I'll stick a link in the show notes. And if you want to find out more about the work that we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au or follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Blue Sky at thecurb.au. We are a completely independent ad-free website that lives on support of listeners and readers just like yourself. So visit patreon.com/thecurb.au to support our work from as little as $1 a month. I just actually popped up in a little essay or more kind of a blog post about sort of the sadness that I've been feeling in the past couple of weeks. What a great selling tool that is, saying that go and read this stuff, give us a dollar so you can read some sad stuff. But I think that what you're probably going to see from me going forward a little bit more is maybe more discussions and openness about mental health, which is something I've already done quite a lot on this particular interview podcast, but it's something that I think I'm going to be starting to bring into the forefront a little bit more. Things that have been plaguing on my mind and stuff like that. And you might get more of these kinds of free-flowing discussions with myself and a microphone that's sitting in front of me and the dog that's barking next door. All of these little things, the stuff that plays in my mind. And whether you take it on board or not, I'm not too sure. But it's stuff that I think that I'm grateful that I've got an audience to listen to what I have to say, to what my fellow writers have to say, and to what people like David Robertson Smith has to say as well, because he is coming from a section of the community which is often underrepresented on screen and underrepresented as a storytelling perspective too. If you enjoy this particular conversation, I really want you to go out and seek a fellow podcast which I absolutely love. There is a podcast out there that is called Not a Rich Kid, and I'll make sure to stick a link in the show notes, and it's by Tummy Ache Studios, Not a Rich Kid, the podcast. They have done a whole bunch of really excellent interviews over the past year, and they also did a conversation with David Robertson Smith not so long ago, but also they had a chat with Dave Graney and Claire Moore. They've had a chat with Andrew Tanner. They've had a chat with Goran Stalevski, Danielle Binks, Dr. Sarah Atfield, Trish Bolton, a whole bunch of really great people who are talking about creativity from a not a rich kid perspective. Excellent, excellent podcast. That's a huge recommendation from me. And as you probably know, if you're listening to podcasts for a while, rating and reviewing them really helps. And if you go and rate and review us on Podcast Pro of your choice, Apple is a really helpful place to give us a rate and review. That helps bring these interviews and these stories to filmmakers to a wider audience. Also, give a rate and review to Not a Rich Kid podcast as well. It's a great show. Right. New interviews drop on Thursdays. That's today. And then bonus chats also appear on Tuesdays as well. Or if you're signing in and subscribing today and checking out, we've actually got a bonus chat with Frank Mosley as well, actor Frank Mosley. Nadine had a chat with him, and that drops today as well. So you're getting two bonus chats today. And yeah, anyhow, thecurb.com.au is where you can check out all the other interviews and reviews. Here is a clip from We Used to Own Houses, followed by my chat with David Robertson Smith.
What do you want? Stare into the void. It won't meet your gaze. When you can't see the stars, you stop dreaming of space.
Where did your journey into filmmaking come from? What was the thing that kicked off in your mind and said, this is what I want to do as a vocation?
I think that it was like a pretty slow process for me. Like, I started properly when I was like 25 or 26. But that being said, I think I knew like around 18, like I tried to save to do a feature when I was 18. I was working at a power station scaffolding, and like, I was just like making what at that time to me was a crazy amount of money. And I remember being like, oh, like, Kevin Smith made Clerks for like 20 grand or something. And I was like, I'll do that. But it kind of fell through and I just started playing in bands and stuff. But I think, the big thing for me was just, I just knew I couldn't like work a normal job. And like, so like, I was like, I have to, and I just want to be creative. So it was like either music or film. I had to do it. And so I started studying music film music at afters, scoring. And so my teacher, Martin Armajar, sort of took me aside mid-semester and just said, like, look, I really think you should try directing. Because like every class I was just talking about films and filmmaking and, just I just wanted to be in that environment. I spent all my time in the library. Like I was just very into film. I wasn't necessarily into film music. And so I just listened to him and I made my first short, Austin Flowers, and then from there just started doing just directing. So yeah, I don't know. It kind of felt natural. It's one of those things, the first thing I did in my life where it gave me meaning and just like I felt like I slotted in, like my personality just felt good in it, like it wasn't an issue.
As a kid then, we all have this notion of what we want to be when we grow up. What were you thinking that you would be when you grew up as a kid?
Music producer, I think that was my I was like really like into the idea of like an album and like being like, I mean, like the way a producer, back in the day would be like a director of an album in a way of creating like this sort of vibe. I wanted to be a music producer. So again, I was like massively into film. I just think I just didn't have any, like the first film director I met was when I was again, like 25. I met Tom Noakes. And then so that's kind of, it didn't really occur to me. Whereas music, I was around a lot of music people in Budgie. Like there was like band, my sister was dating a band guy, so I was like, oh, there's bands, I know about that. But yeah, so I think like anything, I was pretty much keen to do anything creative. And I spent all my time just like listening to music and watching films. Like we had the video store here and I worked in a CD store. So that was pretty much all I did. Which in a like this sort of town, you've just become a weirdo or considered a weirdo. And then sort of you're just a media geek in general.
I'm curious then, working, like being around the video store, going to the video store, that kind of stuff. When was the first time that you somehow managed to find a film that you felt that you saw yourself in there? Because I know, like, as a kid growing up, you just kind of pick up films and you go, all right, what's this? What's that? Like, I remember watching Dogs in Space as a kid and going, I didn't know this existed, right? And I expected a film about dogs in space, obviously something completely different. But I imagine, like, as you're mentioning, Budgie Boy, we'll talk about where the location of that is in a moment. But, being able to have something miraculously appear for you in that area, was there a film that you saw yourself in there?
Yeah, I'd love to say it was like a cool movie, but it's pretty much just like Aliens. I was really young when I saw Aliens. Like maybe like 7 or something. And then after that it was like Fight Club when I was like 12. And I was like, that was the first time where the filmmaking was on the screen in a really obvious way. You know what I mean? Like where it's sort of like pointing out the filmmaking and like there's Easter eggs if they're like rewatching the movie over and over again. And so that's when I was like 12 or 13, seeing that movie and just being like, the fuck is this? Like that one really shook me. And also it was like, I think politically, like, so anti-capitalist and stuff. I think like I sort of was like zoning in on a lot of like different things, like anti-work. I think it was like adapting my brain a little too early.
I mean, it's like masculinity is a huge aspect too, and we'll talk about that later on. Proximity, where is Budgie Woy in New South Wales?
It's like 2 hours north of Sydney or an hour south of Newcastle. Sort of a very small sort of town, surrounded by other towns, a big lake, a beach, sort of one of those sort of like big mix of sort of like retirees playing golf and then like troubled youth sort of vibe.
Is it known for anything, like is a claim to fame of any kind of notoriety or anything like that?
But Budgie, not sure. No, I don't think so. We have a lot of NRL players and stuff like that. Yeah, that's about it. Like it's pretty small town. I think the band Shortstack lived here at some point.
Right.
Remember them?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's they I think they were ended up in Newcastle or Hunter School, like for performing arts or something. But yeah, I remember that was a thing. No, it's really like there's not it's sleepy. sort of thing.
The reason why I ask is, like, obviously Australia is made up of all these, regional Australia in particular, it's made up of all these towns and places that you tend to drive through to go to somewhere else. And that's what I really appreciate about your work, is you're putting those places on screen and exploring what it's like to live in there. What's that mindset kind of, troubled youth, as you're saying, retirees, that's a clash of cultures there. When did you really think this is something that I should probably tap into on a creative level and bring to life on screen?
I don't think there was ever really like a question as to whether I was going to do that side of things or not. Like, I think that even when I did like Austin Powers, which was like a joke sort of comedy, it was pretty dark as well. But I remember like when I was developing Budgie Woy Boy, that would then become Mudcrab. I remember like talking to people. I didn't have a bachelor degree, but I got into the masters at Afters, and then I. First year there, like, came with the idea, and people were like, oh, like another grim Aussie thing or whatever. And to me, I just had no idea that that was, like when I watched like those type of movies, I felt that was reflecting a reality that I had. And then I was just like, well, that's just film. So yeah, I didn't realize I was tapping into the, like, even with Mudcrab, I didn't realize that some of the reaction would be more of this, wow, like we didn't need that sort of thing. I didn't understand the sort of world that I was tapping into, because just because, like, I think especially with Mudcrab, like, given the things I had experienced when I was young, I feel like I went light on it, to be honest. And so it was just like, yeah, just the sort of clash between even like putting something on screen, then that being in like taken in within the film context, as opposed to just me showing something that's here that is real, and then it's just like, oh, well, I didn't realize that that would be taken out of context or taken as an affectation in that way.
Yeah, like Australian trauma or Australian masculinity is almost a genre in itself in a way, and it then becomes a stylistic choice for some people to say, well, I'm going to do a film about this consciously, but you're doing it about the world that you know. You're holding a mirror up to things.
And it would be inauthentic for me to make a film that was an inner city. Like, Friends and Strangers would be inauthentic for me. It's authentic for James, but it's not authentic for me. And I'd say that about most films in that way. So it's just, it's an interesting sort of like thing to sort of explore. But yeah, I think like when I started looking at what was around me, especially because with short filmmaking, you're like trying to make the most out of the like, small amount of money. It's like, well, I have locals, I have this community, I know all the locations, I can shoot here for really cheap. So it's like, obviously I'm gonna tap into that. And then when I think about all the stories from my youth or from friends and everything that we've been through, it's like, well, exploring that violence, I think that's something that has affected all of us in different ways and has gone on, including like the lead actor, Josh. So it's like we've all sort of grown up and sort of like dealt with it in our own ways, like what we went through. And not that it's like, the worst thing in the world. It's just different. You have like PTSD from like seeing different things like that. Like Josh and I were both like witnesses in a court case where a guy got, well, when our friend bottled someone and the guy like very nearly died. And like, so there's like stuff like that where we were just like, and then that, we're getting chased by those guys and just things like that, where it's just like we've all taken on these sort of stories in our own way and dealt with it in our own way. And sort of Mudcrabs is just about like, yeah, sort of like in, I guess, show off your back in its own way, as well as like exploring other aspects. But yeah, it's just like trying to reflect like a little bit of a glimpse of how that felt.
Is it also a sense of trying to break the normalcy of it too?
Yeah, I don't know with Mudcrab that I was like trying to be like politically, like to have a message, like, you know what I mean? I think I was just expressing anger or something. I don't know. I'd say that about the first two, like the Mudcrab and We Stone Houses. I think they're really just like anger. It's not really like me being like, let's offering a solution. Let's fix this, guys. Let's get together. It's more just like, why does it have to be like that? And then why have I been on both sides of this? Why have I been that spectator who's made those excuses? And why have I also been the person that got that? And it's just like, and then you meet other people who like walk through life normal with like, ways of dealing. Like if someone's like abrasive to them, they're just like calm. And I'm like, fuck, why didn't I get that? Like, you know what I mean? So it's just anger. I don't have it anymore. I don't.
Well, I mean, it's exercising, right? You're exercising it in a creative way, but then I'm also curious too. Like, films, there is for some of them when they're dealing with these kinds of themes of masculinity, of violence, of trauma, there is an expectation from some audiences, not all audiences, that it needs to be that point of education, that point of solving the crisis in a way. What's your perspective on that? How should films really engage with the notion of dealing with these kinds of events on screen?
So you're saying like
Like an
in Australia,
educational point, I guess, is the
yeah,
best way of
I
putting
think
it.
in Australia you'll hear that a lot. Like I think that tends to be a talking point. Like what are we trying to say and how are we addressing the, I don't know. That is a really Australian thing. I'm not sure how much other countries are engaging with that the way that we are. I don't personally believe in it. Like I don't know if that's like should be the goal of all of cinema is to like teach in that way. I think that people can take their own lesson from reflecting a reality or an opinion on something. Yeah, it's tough. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it really is. And like talking about Bird Eater in a way, it's like seeing the critical reaction to that. Like I love that film and I've seen that multiple times. I got to see it in the audience and I saw it down at Cinefest Oz and I loved it and I'd already seen it by that stage. But then hearing the audience reactions coming out of it, some people absolutely loved it and then others were like, well, I don't know what I should take away from that. Is that actually entertainment? Should I be entertained by this? And it's like, you don't have to be like the notion of entertainment, cinema is entertainment, I guess, and having a good time is such a strange concept, right? You know, you watch something like Fight Club, as you're saying, you know, you don't go into that thinking, I'm going to have a good time. The film's called Fight Club, right? So
No, I
this,
think
yeah.
to speak to Bird Eater though, like I've seen people have that reaction.
Yeah.
And even like, friend I've seen friends have that reaction at Jack, like while we were out or something, basically telling him you shouldn't have made the movie or like can't be that person telling that story. And yeah, I couldn't disagree more. Like I just think that the film is exploring what it explores. And I mean, it's about like the way it covers what it's about, it's so electric and like I don't know, it's just like I just don't, it's a really Australian thing. I don't know, kind of there's a little bit of crabs in the bucket about that. I think that you shouldn't be doing this, get back here. I just, the film's that good, it's like what's your problem?
Use the term crabs in a bucket. So let's talk about Mud Crab because, you know, that is such a pointed aspect of that particular film and pulling people down and dragging people back down. And it seems we do that with Australian films, but also it seems we do that with men, with society. That notion of crabs in a bucket, can you talk about your first experience of being around, seeing and learning about that concept?
Specific, I think I just grew up around a lot of that. Especially like eccentricity, I think was a big thing that got dragged down when I was a kid. So it was like skinny jeans. Now they all wear skinny jeans, by the way. It's completely flipped. But it's like, yeah, when I was a kid, it was like if you wore skinny jeans and all black, you may as well like not go out at night. Like you like be careful. And like so like that was sort of a thing. And I just remember frequent small comments about what job you choose to do, who you're dating, what just the way you live should fit this mold. And then anyone who sort of like veered out of it, whether it was being gay, whether it was being a punk, whether it was being an artist, whatever it was, they'd get dragged in. And then the other thing was obviously the tall poppy syndrome, which was anyone who was becoming successful would get dragged down as well. And it was just like this sort of hive mind of people that just felt like they just want everyone equal. They don't want to feel challenged. They don't like how that reflects on their life. I think that I thought that that was specifically like where I was from for a long time. I found out it's like a big thing in the Philippines, and it's a big thing all across Australia, obviously.
Did
So
you
like that's,
have to break yourself out of that mindset at any time?
it's constant. I still do. Like I have a dumb brain. So like I just like I yeah I'm no I have to check myself sometimes. Like yeah, I'm an idiot. So it's like I think everyone does probably if you grew up around, you know, it's, but I'm sort of growing out of it, I think, now. Bad times, yeah.
One of the things I find fascinating watching Budge Boy Boy is like this clash of that and this notion of crabs in a bucket is kind of explored. Now, of course, it makes sense and you go and turn that into mud crab. But seeing this guy, this shirtless guy dancing in an elderly home, you know,
My grandma's house.
grandparents' house, right? Like that clash of everything there is so it's visceral, right? Especially the body of Joshua, of seeing him dancing there. We don't get to see that kind of physicality, and it's something you explore so much in your work of the physicality of men. But we don't get to see physicality of men in that way, dancing in elderly place, you know, that kind of stuff. Can you talk about that clash of elderly, young, masculinity, dancing, all these things that you're working through in that particular short?
In Budgie Boy, especially, like the whole concept is like that, you know, if someone who's being eccentric is dancing, and then you watch them, you watch that movement slowly morph into an acceptable version of that dancing for a man in like Budgie Boy, you know. So it's like someone who's acting very eccentric, doing and sort of being themselves, and just, yeah, that slowly morphing into violence and sort of kickboxing, shadow boxing. That essentially was just based around this club, which is now a pretty nice club, but it was called the Beachcomber Hotel in Tookley. And it was just, that's where we all went out. And it's sort of just meant to be a little like microcosm of like our experience of like starting at 18, going out there, and then eventually learning to act a certain way to get through it. And so it's just like, yeah, it's just meant to look at what people are meant to be, you know, like a societal sort of look at like, this is what you're meant to be, so be that, and just watch someone become it. And I think like there's something, not Josh will laugh about this, but there's something feminine about Josh's dancing in the beginning that I really enjoy. I think he seems really gender free in a way, and not rigid, loose and happier. And so there's just something to that where I just think, I think that's something like where I wish I could be that free as a person. I think I'm like locked into a lot of stuff. And I think that a lot of people feel that way. So it's like, yeah, just exploring that.
And then expanding it into Mudcrab, where he becomes a victim and, you know, is really centered in a way that is quite confronting. And not just from the fellow guys that are in the area, but also from Lanika. Her perspective as a character there is just, you know, quite a terrifying thing. Can you talk about choosing to extend Budgie Woy Boy into Mudcrab and exploring and putting that character through that kind of process in the film?
Yeah, I think it just sort of trying to think of how to expand on it. I've said it before, it's like the sort of idea of like, I like the idea of, yeah, walking into a pokey room, which I've done here, and you see someone from high school or whatever, and I like know that person or have seen that person go through something in an intense way, and they just look like they've sort of become either, you know, a hardened shell, like they're really big and muscly, or they're like, you know, they've lost their way. They're just like, so there's just so many like iterations of how that could have manifested. And in Mudcrab, the guy's just become, you know, a husk. Like he's terrified to be around anywhere, and he's slower and scared, and he doesn't like, yeah, he's agoraphobic basically. So sort of running into that person and then watching the spectator sort of reflect on what they had seen, and the sort of like mentality around that was sort of, I think the layer of that was what was able to make that a longer short, was Lanika's perspective. Yeah, I think that's the real problem too. It's like, it's one thing to just watch that play on a narrative form, but to have it in sort of just like a voiceover with the sort of unreliable narrator, which I think a lot of people didn't pick up on when after I talked to them after the film at a few of the festivals, that she is an unreliable narrator. But yeah, that was meant to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it a few times, and I think it was probably the second or the third time that I watched it that I realized that she was an unreliable narrator. But it's also this notion of the impact of stories, and stories is such a huge thing of how you have crafted like what you're doing on screen. Obviously, they are stories, but it's the nature of storytelling, right? And dance is a form of storytelling in itself. Mudcrab, you have an unreliable narrator. Shirt Off Your Back, you've got these two kids who are telling the same story, but it's kind of the details are different as well. I'm curious for you the importance of storytelling, but not just storytelling like as a form of telling a story, but narration, seeing people actually talking about the story on screen like we do in Shirt Off Your Back. What does that mean for you as a director to be able to use that function to tell your narrative?
Yeah, I love unreliable narrators, I think, because it's more about like less than storytelling about in the regards to like artistic filmmaking or whatever, but it's more like the stories we tell ourselves. So it's always like the reflection of the stories that we tell ourselves to get through life. And so, you know, in Mudcrab, obviously she can't accept, she can't just be like, well, I was a bully and now I'm not, and I can deal with that. You know, and but to live with that and to know that about herself, she just can't. So she has to go through this whole thing. I didn't really know him. He's, you know, he was kind of weird, but I think you know, me personally, I think he was okay. Maybe some other guys didn't like him. You know, you can kind of watch it. I don't even remember his name. And then you see that she does that sort of thing. And then when he needs her to see him, she won't give it to him because that's going to tell her about herself. That I actually did know I have to face this. And for the Shirt Off Your Back, similarly, I think it's like that's more exploring memory, but there's also something there for how much does Eden know and how much is he not wanting to talk about it. So that's not in the reality of the actors. They know and are very aware of what we're doing with the storytelling, but the characters in the film of Eden. Yeah, I think that there's something there for like, does he know more? Is he holding back? You know, is I think he's like become to realize a bit more. And same with Bly, I think he's being more of a protector and sort of playing it innocent rather than sort of being like, we think this guy was this or that.
One of the things which I'm so fascinated by is the way that we, like, you present yarning and chatting with people, because that's effectively what the dialogue is on screen, like Lanika in Mudcrab, where we're getting this feeling of just somebody telling somebody a story. Yeah, you know, like just catching up, and then just the story flows out. And the same with Shirt Off Your Back, it just flows out. And it feels very observational, right? So then I'm curious on a script level, what does that look like? How does your writing on an observational level look like that?
A very simple, like probably a very close to what the film was, to be honest. Yeah, just pretty much like spells out what happens. The kids, even the kids' dialogue, they memorize like everything and then just sort of read it out mostly. And same with Lanika. It's actually my older sister, Kate, who does the narration. So she's just sort of talking. Because I wanted her to sound older and she sounds just like Lanika. So she essentially is just looking at it and just reading. So that was pretty cool. And then just scratching out parts that didn't sound natural.
We used to own houses, feels like poetry in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
So it's a different style of storytelling. Can you talk about the foundation of that and exploring cinema as a form of poetry as you did with that one?
Yeah, it just started with the love of that Ashenspire album. I'd just been listening to it so much, and I was so like upset about the housing market in Sydney, and I still am. Like, I just don't get it. And like, you know, I was watching Q&A last night, and like someone asked a question, and one of the Labor people were just like, well, we're doing all these things to, you know, address it. And then the person in the audience who had a great question, she accepted it. She was like, yeah, sounds good. You should do them. And it's like, none of the things the person said was we should limit how many houses you fucking psychos can own. Like, what are we doing? The answer is like right in front of us. Yes, build more houses. Yes, do all these things. It's like, you can't own that many houses and also get a tax write-off for it. It's like, that's what is doing this. We would make so many houses available on the market. We'll fix this so fast.
Oh, yeah.
if we would get rid of this as a thing that we do for some reason. And it just drives me nuts that it's like we, the people, don't have power. Like, it's just like we apparently don't. Like, because we all know what's happening. And we're just being sold a lie about it. It fucking pisses me off. So it's like, I think like, yeah, that one where it's just like a guy killing a landlord. It's brutal, and I obviously don't want that to happen, but it's just like an expression of that level of anger where you know they know. It's like that hyper-normalization poster. Like, we know they know we lie, or they know we know they lie. And it's true. It's like we all know, they know we know, and there's nothing that will get done about it. It's just getting worse. So it's like we're just going to get these Band-Aid solutions to a problem that's absolutely fixable.
It's fascinating as well. So when I put that in my best films of the year list, that thing, and I used the still of the guy hanging there in the sky, and it was fascinating that like Facebook kept on pulling down the post.
Yeah, that was happening to me.
For suicide?
Yeah.
I was like, well, that's, I mean, sure, but also no. And it's, you know, it just, on a meta level, I guess, not to use that particular word, but that there's specifically that, this notion of the things that we don't talk about that, you know, we should really talk about, which is a housing crisis and the resolution and the impact of the housing crisis. What actually happens when people can't afford a house, when they don't have a home to live? Well, suicide is a natural occurrence of that particular state of mind.
And it's killing.
Yeah, it literally is.
Yeah.
What was it mean to you to be able to put that on screen in such a visceral way? Like, it's that image just is seared in my brain of the visual language that you're using in that short is just really powerful. But what does it mean for you to be able to collate that and put it together and then stick it out into the world and say, this is what's happening, pay attention?
I don't know. Again, it's like just an exercising of like personal grievances. I think I hope people like it and it does something, but it's like that image in particular, you know, I love the image. And I think, you know, at a certain point for me, it's all like, it's just like when I came up with it, I loved it. And then when we were out shooting it, I loved it. But at this point I just see my friend Fraser up there and that's kind of funny. Like, I don't like think about my work in that sort of way where I'm like, you know, this is really gonna do something. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Let's talk about your collaboratives, the people you collaborate with a lot as well. You know, Joshua has been a major part of your filmography. So let's talk about you working with him, building these characters over the films that you've worked with him on. What's that creative relationship like for you?
Josh, yeah, it's like we're very close. Like, he's one of my best friends and known him since I was like 6. My dad used to work for his dad. And then we used to work there as well. We've worked many jobs together. So he's like on the level of like, you know, a creative collaborator where They're there at the moment the idea is in your head and you're telling them. And then they're there when it's on paper, the first draft, and they're there the whole way, giving advice, chatting it through. So he's as close as you can get, really. Yeah, and for Mudcrab specifically, I think that's like where we put the most energy. Like it was really sort of just shaping like from people we knew, like just being like, well, I think this guy was kind of like that, and like, don't you remember that? Like this guy did this, and sort of just being like, oh yeah, and then going in and sort of doing some more writing. So, yeah, Josh really wanted to do this sort of, transformation. So it became a lot of like, well, what if this story was 5 years apart? Obviously after they're going to kill me for wanting to do this. So we kind of played some special games there to get away with it, but. Yeah, like, yeah, and then that took a lot of extra writing, but yeah, very close, very close.
I imagine, like, you probably don't need to give him too much direction as well. No.
No.
So what's that
Yeah.
relationship like too?
Yeah, like, no, I don't. My direction is like in pre, everything's in pre, and a little bit of rehearsals as well for Josh, but he didn't have like massive dialogue scenes, so it wasn't like we needed, to like rehearse with other actors and get everything right. He just needed to be in it, and then we just bring him to set, and I just made sure no one talked to him. He just didn't, because he's such a nice guy that if someone's, he's trying to get in the zone. If someone stops him and says, "Hey, Josh," he'll stop and talk to him for like an hour. Like, he's a really friendly, wants people to feel welcome. So I just did made sure he didn't have that sort of as an issue, and just made sure when he arrives on set, just don't even look him in the eye. Let him walk to his private room and listen to his music and be alone. And then when he came out, he was just ready to go.
So with that in mind, what's the mood and vibe on the set like?
It's still fun. Like I just make him tried to keep him really separate. That was for the winter half, the second half, which we shot first. For the first half, I tried to make him just be part of the gang. So with one of them, he went and lived alone in a little apartment, and then another one, he came and stayed with us while we were shooting. And I just wanted him to feel completely different between the halves. Like he went from having friends, having a community, having fun, socializing, and then to just being isolated and alone. So just tried to recreate that environment for him.
So then let's talk about Lenica, who, I've got so much respect for what they've been able to do in such a short period of time, like writing, acting, the look that, they have on screen is just like phenomenal. What they can do with just a look in their eyes, fantastic. What's it like working with Lenica?
Yeah, amazing. Lenica's the most fun in the world. Yeah, so I first saw Lenica in an acting class with Josh, and they were 17, I think. Yeah, and went absolutely like bananas in front of everyone, crying, sobbing like on the ground, laughing hysterically. And then I was just like, who is this person? And then it was literally like as soon as we talked, I was like, you're going to be in Mudcrab. Like it was just, we had to figure out where. And then it wasn't till I wrote Jenny was the character's name, I think. It wasn't till that character became the spectator that it became Lenica. But Lenica was going to be in another role, but it just didn't, it kind of like simplified everything. And
Yeah.
yeah.
And it's like the first shot that we see of Lenica as well is like looking up at the camera, and again that look. What was it like capturing those kinds of shots on set and just knowing that you've got something pretty special there?
I don't think I knew that. I think I was just sort of like worried about the
Yeah.
yeah, the next thing. No, it's just like it was just fun. Like Lenica's really easy to work with and brings like such a just a great vibe on set. So I think it's like we were just having fun. Like honestly, it's a depressing film, but it's like other than Josh in the winter half, we were all, having a ball. Like it was a very spaced out shoot. It wasn't a big rush, and we were just sort of like hanging out.
So when you see Lenica go on and do other films like Oi, which is just, to me, is one of the best shorts that Australia's been able to produce lately, And it feels like it's in conversation with what you're doing with Mud Crab, and you know, the kind of violence and toxicity and the aggression that's in that film is reflected in Oi too. Can you talk about what it feels like for you as a filmmaker to have collaborated with somebody like Lineker and then see another film that they're in have a conversation with your work? What's that like?
I don't know if it was, if it is having a direct conversation with my work. I'd have to ask Sophie. I love the whole team. I think if anything, it's more that we just share a lot of collaborators and we're all friends. And we're all coming up in like a similar Australian industry. Like I think, yeah, like they have James composing, which is the same composer from Mud Crab. He's absolutely, you know, he's incredible. And so Sophie is also, she did additional writing on Mud Crab, and she was on set for the entire thing. So yeah, I love Sophie. Like when I do my first feature, I'm hoping to have Sophie with me as well. But yeah, so I don't know. I think it's more just like we're all sort of collaborating, and there's just a lot of similarities between us all.
So in that collaborative process, what's that look like? Do you catch up, have creative events, or is it just kind of regular communication of saying, this is what I'm working on, do you want to have a look at it?
When I was in Sydney for like, before I moved for We Stone Houses, I was having like parties at my house and we'd all go out more. But since I've been here, I've been pretty isolated. It's not like that anymore as much, but I think it's more just that we're using a lot of the similar people and we talk a lot. Like Soph was on my new short as well. Yeah, I don't know. I'd say it's just similar sort of collaborators and similar worlds that we're working
with. I'm trying to get at is the things we were talking about earlier, like Bird Eater, like Oi, like your work, like Flathead, like what James is doing as well, like what Alina's doing. There is this huge wave of creativity that feels like, maybe not referencing the other films or anything, but it feels like this conversation that is rising, that is all kind of saying similar things about the state of Australia, the state of, you know, how we are living, how people of your generation are actually having to get by and do things. It feels like this, it's growing and it's being part of something. Is that a conscious thing for you, or like, do you...
I think there's definitely a wave happening. I hope there is. But I do think that there is, like, even as an outsider, like excluding myself from any part of it, I'd say, yeah, definitely. There's so many filmmakers like that you can think of that I think are really exciting right now. I think like Dane's next film is going to be incredible, so I can't wait to see that. And like, Jack and Jim have their next film shooting in like July or something. So I'm not sure what James Vaughan and Alina are up to, but I'm pretty sure they have a film going or something. But like, I just think there's a lot of great filmmakers coming up. I'd say that any similarities in themes have got to do more with society and us reflecting what's happening than us looking at each other, I'd say. That's just my thoughts on it.
Sure. That's fair. Coming back to collaborators then, Jacqueline, I want to talk about working with Jacqueline and creating the visual style on screen. When did you first get to know Jacqueline and know what she was capable of as a cinematographer?
I saw Jack shoot some stuff for bands when we were younger, but I got her to color grade a music video that I did back in 2017. And then we started dating. So from there, we started shooting together a lot. Even with these little band things that she would do back then, I just remember that they just had this vibe to them where I was like, that's way better than what everyone else is doing. Like she would go to like Camp Alohom and sort of shoot her ex-boyfriend's band playing, and it would just be like 3 minutes of uncutting footage, but She'll find this frame like through a crowd or something, or do a music video for someone, for Me Women, and there would just be certain frames where you're like, oh, that's a pretty sophisticated frame for someone who doesn't shoot at all. And then I think once we met, it was like we did one music video that wasn't great, and then we did Budgie Boy Boy as the next thing. So we just started sort of, that was when things started working for me, was when I met Jack, and I started sort of like developing my tastes and then hers alongside mine, and we started to like, yeah, that's when things started to click a
Yeah.
lot better.
The hue as well of your films, like the muted colors and the certain types of blues that you choose to use as well. Like there's a visual connection between them. Can you talk through that
Yeah,
too? Yeah.
we were really specific like with aesthetics at that time as well, and like same now, but now it feels automatic. But like but at that time it was quite difficult, especially because we were using like really like shitty cameras. But our whole thing was like we were like doing the whole digital underexposing and punching it up in posts and trying to create some sort of like look that we could with these sort of like cheaper equipment. Which I think we did. Like when I look back at Budgie Boy, I actually still really like the way that it looks. Yeah, I don't know. It's sort of in the same way as like finding a point of view thematically on like the area. It's like similarly, it's like trying to find this like beauty aesthetic that's showing something so ugly. I think that that's like just an interesting sort of way of approaching that sort of material.
Do you buy into like the auto theory at all? Is that something that you think about?
The or like an or well I think yeah like I think it's I personally just see it as like author, and it's like yeah, well, every director and their team are authors of their work. That's why they're so different. So you know, I think like if I was to direct something compared to if the Bird Eater guys directed something or if Dane directed something, it'd be all completely different work. So, yeah, of course.
The reason why I mentioned
Why, what's
it,
your...
well, yeah, I mean, I certainly do, especially like I know as soon as I put on something that you've done, like, oh, this is, yeah, it's a David Robinson Smith film. Like I know exactly the visual style that I'm gonna get, and I know additionally how you're gonna immerse us into the perspective of the characters, which is, you know, it's a real skill to be able to do that, to just draw the audience immediately into the world. And so, yeah, I really do. And especially from an Australian film perspective, I'm grateful that there's somebody like yourself who's really building a body of work that's showcasing a perspective that is uniquely yours. Yeah, it's great.
Thank you. Yeah, I think yeah, I don't know. I think for the later, the new film especially, it's just been getting out of the way of our instincts, sort of like, and I think that the newer one it has probably the strongest aesthetic because of that, because it's us, yeah, it's really sort of just being more like obviously we plan everything out immensely, but it's like also just being like this just feels natural. We're not going to over-intellectualize this. This is how we do things. So, you know, if something's like closer up than you would might normally do, we'd just be like, that feels not feels good to me. I don't know why. So.
I love to talk about the opening shot of the film as well. Like I'm just in awe of, I rewatched it a couple of times, specifically those opening 30 seconds of the perspective from the car looking out to the trees and then hearing the birds screaming as well. And this layering effect of what we're experiencing and what we're going to see as well. This suggestion of there's something that's going to happen. And violence is
Yeah.
on the periphery. We might expect something like that to happen. Can you talk about crafting those opening moments and setting the mood so perfectly, so you know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, I think it really needed it because you're so in danger with that shot of people watching the first 30 seconds if it wasn't there and being like, what the fuck is this? It's like one of those docs. So I think like informing people that there is an undercurrent, an overture like of something wrong, that something else is happening here, that can inform what else you watch moving forward. And then the other thing is, which the probably the most unusual part of it is that we hold off the push for a while and then begin it and then turn the sound on properly, like the music. And I think that for me is about that we're also signaling the formality of the film and that we're going to be controlling your perspective. So it's like that we're almost as filmmakers being like, we are in control of how this film's going to look, move. So, and what reality is. So it's like placing this sort of like mundane frame and then just going, letting it hang and then pushing, which I think is quite, a pretty odd way of doing it.
It's not off, like I want to say off-putting, but that makes it sound like it's uncomfortable, but it should be uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, I think it's just creating that curiosity for our audience as well, which leads to a sense of tension as well. So it's like there's a few sort of motivating factors for that opening.
You mentioned when you reached out, you're like, you think this is your best one, and it's really phenomenal stuff. Like, I have a really hard time, kind of, not that you need to have favorites and all this kind of stuff, but I have a really hard time disseminating what's not great and what's, whatever. But what you're doing here is really phenomenal, and a lot of it was also about the guys in the car and the different men and the perspective, the view, and the style of masculinity that's there. How did you go about deciding the different types of men to be able to sit in those cars and play that particular character?
That was less of a choice and more of like a like onset desperation. It's just my like uncle plus his friends plus some of my mom's friends. And the issue arose when Eden couldn't come to that shoot day. And we the next day was supposed to be the men, so we had men sorted for that. And then the first day it was just like, now we have to do all the men right now. So that was like all my, family, friends and uncle and neighbors. I've got two neighbors plus my uncle plus my mom's like friends, that we could just get everyone there immediately and start shooting. And it's one of those happy accidents, like that scene turned out being a lot more substantial because of it. And I think that's why it is my favorite work, because it's like that's like I don't think I have a scene like that yet where it's like something where I can't point to where it's come from. Like I can't think of a cinematic reference or anything. I'm just like that scene's kind of stands on its own. So I think that's probably why.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's you're creating tone and mood and vibe, and I guess we should really also talk about the music too, because the style of music that you choose, this really kind of discordant string stuff is, yeah, again, it sets you on edge, as it should do. Your creative choice behind that, where's the determination behind what kind of style of string music that you're going to be using?
It's sort of representing like the so there's the child music, which is like a varying amount of children's toys and xylophones and things that Wade and Joel could find. I just wanted that to feel like a Malick sort of like dreamy, childish feel that's quite innocent. And then for the adult world, the Predator sort of to have this sort of more content, it's more of a more classical adult instrument. And so even the opening noise, the sort of Predator sound, that is a double bass that's like slowed down. So everything in their world, I think, kind of just leans into that sort of like classical space. It's all very adult and, outside of what the kids should be interested in or experiencing.
You also have them, both Bly and Ethan, as co-writers. How important was that to recognize their, like we were talking about collaborative work earlier, but, and you do this for other shorts too, recognizing the collaborative work on a writing level from a story point. How important is that for you?
I think it was extremely important for this because it's their story. So it just had to be, it was just fun. It's just like they're my nephews. So it's just like, to do something like this with my nephews and, we're going to play at Sydney with it. And so we'll go to like one of the theaters there and they'll be able to come and see themselves on screen. It's very, very fun. And, like just little things like, they didn't know who a lot of the serial killers were that I was sort of saying, but Jeffrey Dahmer to them was really big because of the show. And like, so many things like that, that you could just sort of like be like, well, what do you think? Like, and then they just sort of have their opinion on it and be like, all right, like do that. So it's just, I don't know. I think it was just fun and it was just free. And sort of that was the best way to create what they are in the film, which is that sort of innocence and childhood, like just to let them be a big part of the process. And and I tried to do that with the whole short across the whole thing is like things that might structurally not make sense normally in a short, just be like, well, it feels good. We're just going to do that. The kids like it. I like it. Like, so it's like, it kind of has two endings. Like it has the face morph and then it has the demon thing. And it's like, you kind of could have just picked one. And like the flow is like a little bit odd in that way. But it's just like, just trying to not be so rigid, just trying to be a little bit more loose with it. And I think they kind of informed all of that, just being like having more fun.
On a thematic level throughout your work too, like I think the title Shirt Off Your Back is very applicable. I'm going to be really reductive here, but it's like one of the things that does can carry through all of your shorts is that you are going to have a topless man doing something. Like there is a level of that presentation of men's bodies and in Shirt Off Your Back, a boy's body turning into a man, these kinds of things, this presentation of the physicality is as important as what you're saying in a narrative sense. What does it mean to be able to explore that kind of physicality on screen as well?
I guess it's a vulnerability to it, I guess, especially in the Shirt Off Your Back. For me, when I watch it, it's quite shocking because it's you've gone from these tight close-ups and you've kind of forgotten about the jersey in a sense. But to see him take it off and then walk towards one of those men, it's quite this, you realize how little he is and you realize how young he is. And you're like, well, this kid is really vulnerable. And he has no idea how vulnerable. So I think that that is sort of like utilizing his physicality for the audience in that moment to sort of understand the level of fear that should be there. And then for the other shorts, yeah, it's like what we're talking about, just showing the eccentricity and the sort of beauty of freedom. With Eden, definitely it's just young, like showing how young he is and being like, this is a really serious situation they've gotten themselves into. And yeah, and sort of like, especially if you're going from a tight close up like an ECU into a mid like that, the sort of like convention would be that we're releasing tension. So it makes it a lot easier there to transition to a mid as well because you're sort of piling on tension and really revealing more context. You can kind of get away with it.
With that in mind then, like with Mudcrab, the tension of vulnerability of having a group of shirtless guys, there is nothing to hide there. There is just themselves. That exploration of vulnerability is also like it's profound. Like it really is, because you are dealing with something that is again, they've got nothing to hide. They're just who they are. What's that like?
For Mud Crab, like what's the difference?
The difference of vulnerability, I guess, is the best way of putting it.
I think in that image, when you reverse to all those men, it's especially piled together, but there's just this sort of like, gosh, there's someone's, my friend Toby said something about the Shirt Off Your Back that I think it applies to that part in Mud Crab where it's like a chorus of depravity, where it's like, that's sort of like what I see where and like Andrew who is a Budgie poet who gave me the title The Shirt Off Your Back, he's the one at the front banging his chest. So Sorry, Andrew, I don't mean it, but it looks quite scary with all the tattoos and stuff, especially compared to Josh, where Josh is alone in the frame and looks so vulnerable and scared. So yeah, I just love the idea of this sort of like, yeah, chorus of depravity that's sort of facing him down, but he doesn't quite understand.
I want to quote, I think it's from one of the earlier films. I think it's from Trap, possibly. But Jason Fu has something where he says, "There is meaning in just eating food and getting drunk with people together." And that, I think, is kind of the notion of what underpins a lot of what you do as a filmmaker. And, you know, it's you're exploring so much, but it's also providing meaning to this form of life, this living. Is that something that you consciously think about? This notion of just providing meaning to food, getting drunk, people together?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've been given a meaning for a while. Yeah, I think so. I think it's like the best thing in the world to me. It's like those things in that time. So that is something I agree with wholly that Jason said. I think that's in
Yeah,
the
that's it. Yeah,
docker
sorry. Yeah,
that
getting it
I.
mixed up. Yep.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, it's finding meaning in everything. It's mining everything, you know. I guess that's the goal.
So, I mean, we talked about like these heavy themes and stuff like that. And as you're talking about, like, it's a reflection of the world that you know and you live with and you understand. In a complicated way, how then do you kind of step yourself down emotionally after shooting a film and having put this stuff on screen? How do you distance yourself from what you've done?
Geez, I don't know. For me, it's like there's just a real, it's hard. Every film I've done's been sort of surrounded by some just insane, annoying tragedy. Like Mudcrab, my dad died right before it. And we used to own houses, my best friend got cancer, and then for the shirt off your back, he died. So it's just been one of those things where I don't think there's been a way. I think there's just been life stuff happening, and just yeah, like for the shirt off your back, I finished the edit, and then I literally the day we locked went out to dinner. After the dinner, got home and had the text about Marcus and him in hospital. So I had to drive to Queensland the next morning, and so I just yeah, it's very rare that I get a chance to sort of like unpack peacefully what's happened, you know. It's always sort of like yeah, some bullshit happening. So for this one, it's just been sort of returning from that, finishing the music, and then now just sort of like dealing with the grief, like not really sort of processing that.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot to process, you know?
Yeah, it
Yeah.
was awful. It's been, this
Yeah.
being a tough one.
It's you know, as you're saying, like this avenue of creativity of creating films is a form of exercising as well. Like it's exercising these emotions and putting out on screen and then hoping that it reflects and somebody resonates with it. When you're then sitting like you're talking with me and going to film festivals and stuff and people ask you about it, like strangers asking you these kinds of questions, what do you do? How do you feel when they come in and they're like, tell me about this? You know, how do you, yeah.
It's hard because you get like a sort of vulnerability dump where you're like sort of like, oh, like I shouldn't have said, you know what I mean? Like I just, you're always embarrassed. So I think like, yeah, like there's like articles about Mudcrab that I just like can't Google my name because just seeing it, like what's written there, I just cringe. So I was like, no, I didn't mean it like that. I meant it like this. So yeah, I think that's just like what happens when the work's personal. So maybe I'll do that with sci-fi next and try to make the conversations really
Yeah.
easy.
With that in mind as well, and I should have probably looked at this a bit more, have the films travelled internationally? Like what kind of film festivals have they gone to and been shown at?
Mudcrab was at like Raindance and Santa Barbara. Houses. We didn't really do much international applications for that because we just wanted to go online. But it got watched a lot internationally because of Ash and Spire, I think. So it's actually been logged more times on Letterboxd than Mudcrab. So I think it's sort of, I don't know, maybe it was Ash and Spire for that. But yeah, the reactions are pretty similar. I think it sort of translates. Both films, I think We Stand Houses kind of was received better overseas than Australia. But I think Mudcrab, yeah, maybe a little bit less. Like, they just think, like, what the fuck is happening in that country? That's
Yeah, I mean,
it.
I watched The Surfer last night, and
Yeah.
it's interesting, but it's also this like written from an international perspective, directed from an international perspective, and it's exactly that kind of thing. Is this what they think that Australians are like? Not all like that, but again, we've got to get these stories out and explore in a narrative sense. You mentioned Letterboxd. You're quite active on there as well.
Yeah, a lot.
What's that mean for you as a filmmaker to engage with, other films and other creatives that way, but then also to see people engaging with your work on there too? What's that experience like?
I personally find it to be positive. Like, I think that I don't really react too negatively to any bad feedback, and I think the positive stuff doesn't gas me up too much. So I think it's like I enjoy it. And the main thing for me is just seeing, like, having my other filmmaker friends on there and yourself and everyone, and just being able to be like, what's everyone watching? And then just sort of hearing and being like, oh yeah, I gotta see this, I haven't heard of that. And it's just, I don't know, like, it's for me the most healthy social networking, because it's just about something that I love. And yeah, like, it's not, doom
Yeah,
scrolling. You can't doom
it's
scroll,
great. You
really.
know, you don't have that kind of intro. Like, there's no like nothing outside. It's just that. It's brilliant.
Yeah, the only time it's sort of unhealthy is like the first time you play in a festival and you, like, go out to drinks. I'm like,
Yeah.
I just want to look and I just want to see what they've said. It's so tempting to just sort of, like, refresh the page and be like, ah, Alex Lyons got me again.
Yeah, look, yeah, I know Alex. He's a nice guy. It's not personal, I promise you.
It is what
Whenever I see it, I'm like, no, Alex, you just didn't get it, mate. You just didn't get it.
I'm looking forward to the shirt
Yeah.
off your back
Well, he
review
keeps on
then.
coming back. He keeps on watching them, so that's positive.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's true.
With that in mind as well, like the whole thing of the Letterboxd 4. I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you have a like the four films? Have you watched those things that the people, the directors do?
I think I have a four. Oh, well, I do. I know I do. Yeah. Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. Rashomon, Alien, and Beautrevais.
Interesting.
So it's changing all the time, though. It's like more, that's more like a, this is what I'm currently thinking about, not a, this is my all-time. I don't think I have all-time four. Like, yeah, I can't really, I can't really think of it. If I, it would be pretty
Well, I
basic,
mean,
probably.
I think putting people down to an all-time four and saying this is it, it's never shifting, is such a restrictive
Yeah.
thing. Because as you're saying, like it's about what you're creatively kind of resonating with over time. And it's interesting you mentioned Beautrevais. Like I can see the influence of Claire Denis and the impact of her work on yours is this perspective. Yeah.
Beautrevais was massive for Mudcrab, especially, but for everything. But that film, like, that film is literally the perpetrator of a violent event reflecting on it without any awareness. Like, it's yeah. That was probably one of the biggest influences other than
Yeah.
Crossbow.
I mean, I remember watching it for the first time. I did not like Beautrevais when I first watched it. And yeah. So
Neither.
what was your first experience like then?
I just was like, yeah, it's like 3 out of 5, pretty good, I guess. It's very
But
pretty. Like, that's what I thought.
then it worms its way into your head, right?
Yeah. Something happened and I watched it again, and then I realized the story unfolded, and I just
Yeah.
realized what was going on.
Yeah, it was
that the same
like,
for you?
it lingered. I think it was like a month after I watched it, and I woke up and I was thinking about it, and I was like, what the fuck am I thinking about Beau Travail? Like,
Oh,
why?
right. Also, it was one watch and then ref
Yeah.
oh, that's great. That's the perfect
Yeah.
film experience. I had that with film
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I
RMN.
love that
Did you
film.
watch
Yeah.
that? Me too, yeah. But I walked out of the cinema like at MIFF being like, I think I fucking hated that movie. And then we were all talking about it at the bar after, figuring out what the bear meant. And then we got it. And then once that clicked, it was just like thinking about it constantly, like, holy shit. That movie, it's so
That's
good.
the thing is it's so fascinating when films have that impact on your mind, right? And I remember watching the trailer for No Country for Old Men for the first time, and I don't usually get nightmares from watching films, but I had nightmares from watching No Country, just the trailer for No Country. And so when I sat down to watch it in the cinema, I hated the film because I'd had months of like
What?
this, fuck you, you've disrupted my sleep, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I've gone back and I love that film. It's a great film, but the way that they
Yeah.
linger in your mind and it kind of circles around and plays in there and thinks about it.
Well, I think that's the one bad thing about Letterboxd that I will say, the need to instantly have an opinion after a film is not good. Like, I think a lot of people are like rating a film as they walk out of the cinema, and it's like the amount of times that, I've had that happen where it was like Killing Them Softly, I hated. And then I just grew to absolutely adore it. There's so many films like that that I sort of like had to really sort of think about for so long after and then change my mind. And yeah, the idea that people will get it wrong and then change it, it's like,
Well, I
that's
really
what
like
happens.
the Little White Lies way of writing things. They have like the pre-expectation of what they feel the film would be, how they felt during it, and then afterwards. So it's like sometimes you'll have a 2-4-2 rating.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really good.
Right, I've
So
never
Little
seen
White
that.
Lies, great review site, but that's their form of reviewing. Yeah, it's great.
That's really
I'm
cool.
curious then, like on a creative level, how do you stop other filmmakers' ideas or themes infecting your ideas and themes?
I think like at the start it's impossible because you're just trying to like make a film. So like I'm just like, I just need to like have one shot make sense when you cut to the other shot. Like I was still really in that territory. And I think like now I'm just sort of like less sort of, I'm just ingesting films that are trying to like learn from other avenues, but it's like just not using shots from films as references anymore. Like that's sort of been a big shift. It's just like I'm not. That at the start was a big thing for me, and now I'm like not really doing that as much at all. Like sort of now it's like we have the location, we know the sort of lenses we want, we know the shot size, we know the vibe. We're trying to look at other places like photos and artworks and stuff because we want to. I think it's like the writer of RMN had something I read recently on Letterboxd where it was like he was talking about Blonde and sort of the unfair ratings of that or something. Actually, maybe it was that Eugene guy that directed Spree, but and it was sort of talking about like, look, it might not be a perfect film, but what it does do is like offer new images to cinema, like fully fresh new images that don't exist, that haven't existed. And like if that's not the point of like directing a film to at least have attempted to do that, like what else can there be? And it's just like I kind of agree with that to an extent. I think it's like, I shouldn't be trying to replicate done shots before and like so that people can tell me that I made a film like this or like that. It's like there should be something that you're offering that's new. And that, I think that that's hopefully like what the entire new wave of Australian filmmakers should be trying to do.
Do you see it as a new wave? Like, I mean, to me, I do. Like, we've already kind of talked about this, but the word new wave, and it's interesting. I talked with Alex Proyas a couple of years ago, and I used the word revolution, and he was like, "Oh, we're not allowed to use that word." But new wave and revolution, it feels like those two kinds of things are words that we apply to like the 70s and 80s, right? Not something that happens now. But to me, it feels like there really is an active new wave going on. Do you feel that?
Yeah, for sure. I think there is. Like it's been happening for a while, I think. Like it's before I was, like before Mudcrabble or anything like that. I don't know where it would have started. Like what would you call, what's the ground zero of the Australian New Wave?
Well, fuck, I don't know. You know, because it's like...
What's that first film by Aline?
Strange Colours. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe the...
Yeah, maybe Strange Colours like would be probably around it, you know, that kind of thing. Cause I remember walking out of the cinema and seeing that and just being in awe of what was created. It felt like, you know, a bit like what you're doing with Shirt Off Your Back. Like, we've seen the forest and the trees and all this kind of stuff before an Australian screen, but I've not seen it from this perspective. And it's what I felt with Strange Colours. I'd not seen... that, like, it felt like if we're going to do a comparison, I've always said to people, it's like Wake and Fright made by Kelly Reichardt. You know, it's like this comparison, there's anger and violence in there, but there's not. It's really, it's got, disconnected. So I'd never seen that from that perspective,
I really loved her other film, Petrol, as well. Yeah. People didn't connect with that as much, I don't think, but I just thought it had a great atmosphere and I thought the story was easier to follow than people said as well.
I completely agree. I mean, I loved it too. I live for whatever Alina's doing. What I find really fascinating, you've been working for pretty much a decade now, like creating short films and stuff. And there's another David hyphenated Smith here, David Vincent Smith here in Perth, who did He Ain't Heavy. He also kind of been building up and doing shorts for a long period of time and working through and getting that creative juice of going, this is what I would kind of want to do on screen. So then the big ultimate question, which I think was like when I first reviewed Mudcrab, was like, when are you going to make a short feature film? But it's like that expectation of working, building up, getting your creative juices going and knowing what you can actually do and making that leap from shorts to features. When do you know... How do you know when you're ready to do that?
I think if you ask any short filmmaker, they will tell you they're ready right now. I think if you had asked me a year ago, 2 years ago, I would have said now, and same now. So I think I've got one feature with Sanctuary Pictures, which is, you know, Ari Harrison from Umbrella and Julie Ryan. And so that's a thriller that's been development funded by Screen New South Wales. And then I've got another feature called Colossus that's with development funded by Screen Australia that is produced by Michelle Bennett and Julia Corcoran, executive produced by Michelle Bennett. They're on track. Like I've been writing them especially Colossus, I've been writing for a few years now. I'm hoping that the end of this year to next year, I'm hoping to do two quickly, in quick succession, because I feel like I've been sort of, since COVID and since making Mudcrab in that environment, I think I've sort of just been really wanting to just go. And that's why I've been releasing shorts frequently, is I think, or, you know, as frequently as I can, is that I just really want to get going now as quickly as possible.
Yeah, on a selfish level, I'm wanting you to go as quickly as possible because I want to see what you do on a feature. Like if you can do this right in 10 minutes, in 15 minutes, right, that's what you're going to be able to do on a feature. It's going to be really exciting.
I hope so.
No pressure. I'm not trying to add pressure on you. But I'm excited.
No, we'll see.
Yeah. Coming back to the connection point, I only kind of really watched some of the things that Lenica had done because of seeing them in Mudcrab. And so it's these connection points of going, right, this person's done that. Oh, they've worked on this. And it's, you know, I like that crazy person with the red pins and stuff, you know, on this side of the screen, this wall is just going to be, you know, But that's the thing, is like this collaborative sense of going, right, you worked on this and let's see what you have to say on that. And it's exciting. You know, I always say that I do this because I'm interested in, so I do it for my audience, which is me, and I hope that everybody else is interested. But I know that there is a whole world of people out there who are fascinated by what you're creating on screen and then what your collaborators are also creating too. This new Australian new wave it's thrilling. Yeah, it's really exciting.
I think that I'll say as well, that does come across in the way you work, which is really great. It's, you can tell that you care and that it's, you're doing it for you. And that's what, why it's interesting.
Oh, so that's good. Great.
And same with film.
As well. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Hey, thanks again for listening to this chat with David Robinson Smith. Visit davidrobinsonsmith.com for more details about his work and to check out some of those videos. And for other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review, and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and I'll see you on the next one.